On today's show, the Cavs' bodies at small forward all left something imagination last season. So we're going to talk about three of them: Dean Wade, Jetty Osmond, Lamar Stevens. On today's show,
you are Locked On Cavs, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast.
Today's episode is brought to you by Bird Dogs. Go to birddogs.com/lockedon and enter the promo code LOCKEDONNBA. They'll throw in a free custom Bird Dogs Yeti style tumbler with every order with that promo code. Evan is always drinking out of that now. It's like his new favorite cup.
My water cup.
Yeah. I'm Chris Manning. I cover the NBA and the Cavs for outlets like SB Nation, Cleveland Magazine, a bunch of places, Diamond Uprocks, blah, blah, blah. Just basketball show. That man over there is Evan Damrell. He is the founder of independent site Right to Euclid, which covers the entire Cleveland sports scene. As always, we have Jake Stevens producing. I want to thank you for making Locked On Cavs your first listen every day. Remember, we are free and available wherever you get your podcasts and on YouTube. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day. All right, segment one, Dean Wade. Segment two, Jetty Osmond. Segment three, Lamar Stevens. All right, Evan, Dean Wade, I'm going to hit you with some shooting splits for Dean Wade. Are you ready?
Sure.
All right. So shoulder injury really changed the trajectory of his season, I think. We saw that, I think, in how it just looked. But the numbers are pretty indicative of this. Before he got hurt on December 2nd, 41.1% on catch and shoot threes. That was on 3.3 attempts per game. That's a 17-game sample. Really great. Gets hurt on December 2nd, as I said. December 3rd on, 27 games, 31% from three overall, 30.4% at catch and shoot threes, and down to 2.6 attempts per game. Evan, I don't think it is hyperbole to say that Dean Wade looked like a completely different player once he got hurt.
No, not at all. I think he looked like a shell of himself. Like, I don't think the confidence was 100% there when he was inserted into the starting lineup to kind of be that answer at the starting three. And like on paper, it made sense. He is a bigger-ish player that helps with some of the rebounding issues that may face Allen and Mobley at times. And he can just be that opportunistic third big that grabs rebounds. And also just more than that, like he provides spacing and he provides shooting. And if you're hellbent and determined to play 2 7-footers in your starting five, like you need spacing other than from the guard position just to kind of even things out things out on the offense. And prior to the injury, he looked tentative at times, but then like when you'd see him get the ball in wide open looks, he would sometimes just pass it to a teammate or something and kind of like just not rip the shot opportunities you wanted him to when he was out there. And then after the shoulder injury, it really fell apart. And I wonder if it just had like a direct hand-in-hand impact on his confidence as a player. Like I asked JP Bickerstaff, I think it's when either Okoro went down with that knee injury, the subject of Tuesday's show, or maybe soon after that game, just like, hey, Dean maybe put together some pretty serviceable minutes. Like, are these opportunistic moments for him just to kind of put some spot confidence stride moments? I'm trying to articulate it as I talk here, but like just build that momentum heading into the postseason and just kind of regain a little bit of that form. And JP's like, yeah, that's the thought process behind it. And unfortunately, like, he didn't have it the postseason and kind of just never really had it after that shoulder injury. It's unfortunate because like that's a success story in terms of just an undrafted free agent. The Cavs spent time, energy, and resources, especially the G League, developing, and like that was a success story. And the Cavs just signed not a sizable extension too, but like a pretty good extension for a guy that at least provides you value in the NBA. And it's just a shame that it didn't quite click after that injury.
For him, I just don't know. I would love to get him just kind of straight up just how he felt. Like, did the shoulder not feel right? Like, did it not fully recover? Did he feel comfortable when he came back? Because it just didn't look like it. And I think that it is pivotal to point out and noteworthy to point out that part of the reason the Cavs were comfortable letting Kevin Love walk is because they felt like Dean Wade could step into those minutes. That was the plan.
Well, that was the thought process behind benching Kevin Love, period, was,
bingo.
Okay, Dean Wade's getting healthy. We signed him to an extension. He's clearly part of our future plans. He's at least, in theory, a younger version of what Kevin Love gives you, and he never really lived up to those expectations.
They went to make the transition that was probably, it was, the writing was on the wall if you go back and look and say, okay, Dean Wade signs his extension before the season starts. You get to Kevin Love's last year's contract. We don't know what his future holds. The writing is on the wall for this to happen, for you to move from one era of that position to the other. And it didn't work. And it's not to say that Dean Wade can't rebound next year. Maybe he gets healthy. Maybe he finds his confidence again next year. But how the end of the year went, whether it was the injury or whatever it is, what all that contributed to it, I mean, I wouldn't feel super great about where he's at coming off of the end of this year. I would feel some pessimism about like what exactly he is just based on how the end of the year went and how he just wasn't playable. He's also a light rebounder for being a four, mm-hmm. and like that is clearly a need for Cleveland. And it makes him like kind of like, I don't know, like, does he get a little bigger? Like, what does he change to maybe kind of, do they change scheme stuff to kind of have him crash more? But he has to become, I think, a more physical rebounder if he's going to kind of hit whatever his potential is as a kind of a tweener.
So he is interesting because we touched on this a couple episodes ago, or at least I did, that Dean Wade was a four at Kansas State, was a four heading into the NBA, was maybe even a small ball five for the Cavs at times. But the Cavs kind of the script with him and Lamar Stevens and said, like, okay, Dean, we need you to become more comfortable playing the three. And Dean's like, there's not a lot of difference, like, offensively in terms of, like, what my assignment and roles are, and just in being a guy who can act as a screener. Like you said, he's a light rebounder, but at least in he provides you that size and maybe a little bit just that extra edge just to crash the glass. And he was healthy and confident, maybe that would have like at least stymied what a New York was doing a little bit, but that's neither here nor there. And it's been interesting to watch his growth and development. And at least in theory, like, the Cavs ran lineups that featured Mitchell at the point and Wade at either the three or the four. It was a lot of spread pick and roll, like Wade flaring out to the perimeter in those scenarios, or even rolling to the basket because he does have the ability to get up and in terms of just attacking the basket. But it's just odd to watch what happened. I do think a lot of it was the injury came at an ill-advised time. It's somewhat similar to Isaac Okoro, where, like, the injury just came at an ill-advised time and it really killed a lot of the momentum, at least in Wade's case. Shook his confidence after a while because he was getting a lot of like wide open and sometimes clean looks from the perimeter that normally he would either knock down or at least you'd feel more confident about him taking. And then you saw in turn the confidence of the coaching staff wane, and that just is a bit of a vicious cycle as he tries to refine his shot and his rhythm and everything. And the Cavs kind of can't afford to do that with a lot of these guys. If like, if you're not giving us something, we have to look at something else because we're trying to win. We're not here to like fully commit to developing players and maybe trying our best to make the playoffs. Like, the goal is to make the postseason. And Dean Wade is just, it's interesting. So if like, we're trying to give him like a homework assignment at Locked On Cavs, at least from my end, like this summer. I know he's a grown adult, so he doesn't really need this from me, but in terms of just saying homework assignment, but like, if he's able to refine and regain some of that confidence, like there's something there that at least could be serviceable enough that he is like your eighth or ninth or tenth man in your rotation. Like, hopefully if you're Cleveland, you address the need this offseason by really prioritizing wing depth and three-point shooting. But if like Wade is like a guy who is getting you 10-15 minutes a night and you kind of see what he provides in that limited space, you can roar from the more, obviously pull it back and give it to somebody else too, but like kind of just put him in that role, just maybe let him regain his confidence in limited bursts and maybe compound upon it, because the three-point shooting is a commodity and something the Cavs just need for how they function on offense.
If he is confident and healthy, he's a rotation player. That's it. We'll see if he gets there. It's an open question. He does have a salary, we should note, that is theoretically stackable for trades. We'll see if that matters at any point. All right, after this, we're going to talk about a player who does not lack for confidence. Jetty Osman. Literally, I think the most confident player on the Cleveland Cavaliers for whatever that is worth. But today's episode is brought to you by Bird Dogs. Look, Bird Dogs recently sent us some free product, and I got to say, I'm loving
Comfy.
It.
Love yeah. it.
I wore them last week. I wore a pair of the shorts he sent us to work, and they were extremely comfortable to wear into the office in a professional setting. And when I went on a midday walk to get some vitamin D and some fresh air, they were great for the walk. And then I went to dinner that night for my mom's birthday, and I wore the shorts to that too. They were versatile and everything. Evan actually is wearing a pair of Bird Dogs right now.
Correct. Yeah, I am. I never worn shorts with the liners built into them, so it was a bit of a foreign concept. When I tried it on, it felt natural. It felt comfortable. And like these are, I have been shopping quite a bit, looking at what they have to offer, just because I'm like, you know what, I might have to add a couple more pairs of Bird Dogs to my rotation, just in terms of gym shorts or just even casual wear for a general day to day.
Yeah, they're super versatile. They're super comfortable. These might end up being the only pants and shorts that I own at some point. Right now, you can go to birddogs.com/LockedInNBA. And when you enter the promo code LockedInNBA, they'll throw in a free custom Bird Dogs Yeti-style tumbler with every order. Again, go to birddogs.com/LockedInNBA and enter that promo code LockedInNBA to get a free custom Bird Dogs Yeti-style tumbler with every order. Thanks again for making Locked On Cavs your first listen every day. Every dayers, we are going to be back tomorrow talking about Jared Allen. It is in the ether discussing Jared Allen trade, so we're gonna put our finger on the pulse of what I'm seeing people getting mad about on Twitter.com, and we're going to talk about the value and the merits of perhaps trading Jared Allen this summer, so tune in for that. All right, so Jetty Osman, 77 games, 8.7 points, 1.5 assists, 37.2% from three, 45.1% from the field. Evan, Jetty has ended up in a very different place than where I thought he might end up as an NBA player. He is just straight up a gunner who can dribble a little bit, but is a liability on defense and isn't strong enough to really bang defensively, or isn't strong enough to hold up against these bigger perimeter players defensively. I don't think this is a guy that really scales up to get deep into the playoffs. He does not feel like that kind of me. I don't see this as a guy that can play for you in crunch time or in big minutes in a close playoff game. I don't see that player in Jetty.
I don't either. I thought you were, when you were first directing this, I thought you were about to David Zavak me, but...
What does that mean?
Just imploring JB to play Jetty Osman more than Isaac Okoro.
That's a Jackson Flickinger move. That is what that is.
Guys who work in the legal field that are Jetty Osman advocates. Interesting. It's just... I don't know. Either way, Jetty is just a fascinating character to me, or player to me, because on paper, he provides a lot of what Cleveland needs. Sure, it's a lot more limited because he has such happy feet on defense. I had Jackson Gatlin, the host of Locked On Rockets, reach out to me once during like when the Turkish national team was playing, saying like, is Jetty usually this bad on defense? And I said, oh, does he have happy feet? And he's just like, that's how you describe it. It's a good way to describe it. And that's what Chris and I talk about a lot, is Jetty is a little overzealous when trying to defend the opposition, and it just gets him blown past, and he's just not a great defender. And I think that's just never going to be a path of getting minutes in GB Bickerstaff's rotation. And I think just looking at what Jetty Osman is as a player, you asked me this question for Tuesday's show on who is or isn't going to be on the roster just heading into opening night next year. Like, Jetty Osman to me, at least in my eyes, is more of a trade asset for Cleveland right now, just because at least in theory, he is a wing player. He's a bulkier wing player. He provides you that three-point shooting. And if you're a team that's comfortable with riding with the highs and lows with him, like I think like a team like Atlanta, especially just how like Quinn Snyder likes to employ gunners off the bench like that, like he makes a lot of sense with the Hawks currently constructed, just because the way the Cavs are built schematically and the way they're coached, like if you don't provide a modicum of solid defense, like you're gonna get yanked. JB doesn't care if you provide three-point shooting or if you're able to impact the advanced analytical stats and everything, and just in every which way, just because of the shooting and gravity you provide. And yeah, Osman was a bit of the unsung hero in the postseason. I think he has those moments where you're like, yeah, that's the idea of what Jetty Osman can be. And then there's just like a nice solid 5 to 10 game window where things just aren't so great, and it can get a little frustrating to like figure out what his role is, and I don't think we have much more time to really like deliberate on it.
No, I think Jetty is a trade chip. That's what he is. Jetty at this point is someone who has this last year of his deal that is non-guaranteed. The most useful thing Cleveland, I think, could do with that salary is flip it. I don't know what that's going to look like. I don't know if that's part of a bigger deal. Again, you could stack him and waiting it to 13. It's not an exorbitant amount of money. It's like, I think, like $6.7 million. That isn't a salary on its own that is necessarily going to bring you back a useful piece.
You probably bundle that with like another contract too.
It's like him plus Wade or him plus Rubio or whatever it is. I think that's where we're looking here. Evan, this past year had crazy on off numbers.
Yeah, that's what a lot of folks like to point at. They're like, oh, in terms of on off or like offensive rating, like the Cavs are their best when they have Jetty Osmond playing. He should be starting. And I'm like,
there's context to that.
Well, it's just those numbers to me are just out of whack. What I think what we watch with him and for the rest of his career, like the spacing is cool. What I thought he was going to be when we saw him some Turkish film and then some of the early Cavs stuff in summer league and whatnot was kind of like a guy definitely more offensively inclined. I never thought he was necessarily going to be like a rugged defender. He's not strong enough for that. But I thought he would handle the ball. Yeah, but like the Ty Lue thing was like, well, you just throw him out there and it's like that's the only way he was getting minutes. It was like, hey, go play hard and be this hustle guy. That's what he was. He still plays, I think, pretty hard. But I think defensively, it is just like it has never come together for him. And he's just not strong enough, I don't think. Like, compare him to someone like Okoro. Like, yeah, like Okoro isn't as good of a shooter, but Okoro, like, will bump and grind and get a guy's face. That is not what Jetty does. Like, Jetty offensively also just has kind of not developed some of this tertiary playmaking stuff that I thought was going to come for him. And I think that has limited what he can be. He is great for a Cavalanche. He is great to be the guy that hits the three at the end of a long run and he can get hot. That is cool. There is a place for that guy in your rotation, but I think if you're Cleveland and your wing rotation is what it is, I would absolutely be willing to sacrifice him to go do something else. Like, I think like if he was like your third wing and he was a more controlled version of Jetty, you could talk me into him being someone you kind of extend past his contract. But I think what you have now on the wing and what you need next to your two guards, it's just not exactly where I would want my minutes. You just hurt yourself doing a podcast.
No, I was cracking my knuckles as you're talking. My wrist popped a little bit, and I just went, ow, because it hurt. So, but to your point, yeah, it's especially if the Cavs do grab, let's say they grab two wing players that come off the bench, or like one starts, one comes off the bench, or whatever happens this offseason for Cleveland. Like, there's no minutes for Jetty Osmond, as you had noted as well. Like, it's $6.7 million that's partially guaranteed, which is a bit of a trade chip in of itself if a team wants to relieve themselves of some salary. If you combine that with Dean Wade, that gets you about $12.4 million roughly, and like that's a pretty easy contract to kind of like finesse and just finagle into some type of deal. With Rubio instead, it would be about $12.8 million, which isn't as clean as the Wade fit, but either way, there's avenues and paths to make upgrades if you want to use the contracts you have currently constructed. It's just how do you want to work it? Because I agree with you. Like, if Dean Wade is confident and he's feeling himself, I think it's a limited role where you see how far does this confidence go. And again, if there's guys that are just more established ahead of him as well, he's a rotation player. But for me, like Jetty, he's just so volatile as a player because if he doesn't have his shot going, he's going to keep ripping it and kill possessions and opportunities for you, and then he's going to get cooked on defense. Like, I think about what Derek White did to him with the Boston Celtics, or I think about what Jalen Brunson just did to him in the closing moments of game one, or just any time he was really the primary point of attack defender on Brunson in the playoffs. Like, Osmond just is a weakness and a liability for the Cavs on defense, and opposing teams that are smart or understand the assignment know, like, hey, when Osmond's on the floor, get him isolated or get him in a pick and roll and just attack him constantly. He's not going to be able to defend you because, like you said, he doesn't even have the strength, or he maybe just is a little too overzealous, as I said.
Yeah, I don't think he, like, tries. He just doesn't try that hard on defense, and it's pretty apparent. All right, we're going to talk about one guy who definitely does try in defense after this. That's Lamar Stevens, who I also like, but I also have a weird type because I am who I am. Today's episode is brought to you by FanDuel. Make a fast break to FanDuel during the NBA playoffs, because right now new customers get a no-sweat first bet up to $1,000. That is right, $1,000 back in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Evan, a bet that I will say that I made, that I've had for a while since betting became legal in Ohio, that I'm feeling increasingly great about, is that I have a Nuggets future, and I got them at plus 800. I think that team is going to win the title, and I feel like that one for me is going to cash out. I think I'm gonna win there. I feel great about that.
Oh boy, Chris, this is his real degen hours, folks. He's a loose cannon, and he's gonna hit big on one score, and then just keep going and going and going and chasing the high. So, if the Nuggets win the finals, I may be looking for a new co-host.
No, because here's the thing. Here's the thing about FanDuel. You can also set limits every month. That's what I do. So you can limit how much you're actually putting into the app. That's what I do. I have a set limit, just a little, you know, a little taste here and there, but it's controlled, you know? Remember, their app is safe and easy to use. They have awesome promotions to check out. You get paid instantly as well. There's no better place to bet all the playoff action than America's number one sportsbook. Visit FanDuel.com/lockdown and get a no-sweat first bet up to $1,000. That is FanDuel.com/lockdown. FanDuel, official sports betting partner of the NBA. All right, Lamar Stevens, 62 games, 5.3 points, 3.3 rebounds, 31.6% from the field, and 44.8% from the field. 31% would have been really bad. It's not good from three, but from the field, it would have been extremely bad. Evan, here's where I want to start with this. He has one year left on his deal. It is not guaranteed.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder what comes for him, because this is a guy that has his merits. Probably not a guy, though, that is in your rotation, barring improvement as a shooter. Do the Cavs just play this out? Do they say, we don't have any future plans, let's do right by you, you can go elsewhere? Does he get a Dean Wade type deal where they extend him early and do it that way, which is what they did with Dean? I'm curious to see, like, if there's any action on Lamar as far as extending him in some way for cost control purposes, at the very least, this summer.
I am interested as well. I wonder even if they go with the like Alfonso McKinney route, where it's none of it is guaranteed and it's on a year by year basis, as you noted.
He's kind of there now.
He is, but he has a $1.93 million team option heading into next year. I would assume the Cavs pick it up because I would assume that's fully guaranteed, or maybe they structure the contract differently. Like, maybe they don't pick it up and then re-sign him immediately with like the McKinney deal. Like, none of the years are fully guaranteed, and he's a bit of the trade asset. But the thing is Stevens does have in his back pocket, at least, like the luxury of being that cultural catalyst for a lot of the players, like whether at least the younger guys, maybe not Donovan so much because he isn't with them, but like Darius gravitates to him, Jared gravitates to him, Isaac does too. Like, he kind of sets that standard of just like that dude who plays really tough, gritty defense. He's more than comfortable with like doing any assignment that you ask him to. He's like the antithesis of Caris LeVert in that aspect, where like offensively it's going to be ugly basketball sometimes, but like he's going to bust his hump and do everything he can on defense to one, get minutes in GB Bickerstaff's rotation, but two, just like that's, he understands what he is as a player and understands what he can do just to impact helping this team win. So just with how the team is currently constructed, so like heading into next year, they have 5 guaranteed players under contract. That's Wade, Rubio, Garland, Allen, and Mitchell. They have team options, obviously, on Mobley, which they're, of course, going to pick up. Isaac Okoro, which I'd assume they pick up. Lamar Stevens, which I'd also assume they pick up. That's 7 players. You have Sam Merrill, technically, too, but that's not fully guaranteed, so like he could be waived. And so you need some depth on the back end, especially if like you do address a lot of just these more pressing concerns that you have, but you do need depth on the back end. And like Stevens is inoffensive enough as a player where like it's not the Isaac Okoro thing where you need Okoro to kind of give you a little bit of juice offensively when he's out there. Whereas like Stevens, he kind of just gives you that edge defensively, and then you see other guys kind of step up because he's busting his hump. It's just a weird impact that he has on the Cavs when he's out there for them. And I don't know. I think the offensive game is interesting just because I know JB Bickerstaff likes to point out that Stevens was like a few points away from being Penn State's all-time leading scorer. So like he does have that upside, but like he is a defensive grinder for the Cavs, and it's a bit of a culture thing for them. So like it would make sense to keep him somehow.
If you had more shooting, I think there's like a way to kind of carve.
I agree.
It's all the shot. It's all the shot that is going to to kind of figure out his role or not. Evan, let's end on this. These three names we talked about today, Dean Wade, Jetty Osman, Lamar Stevens, order them in terms of how likely they are to finish next season on the Cavs roster.
Wade, Stevens, Osman, and I'll be as bold to say that Osman very well may not be on the opening night roster.
Well, give me a yes or no, he'll be on the roster. You said you're going to go bold, and you kind of hedged your bet a little bit there.
No, I said by the end of next season was your question. I said, yeah, Wade and Stevens will likely be here by the end of next season. And I said Osman won't be on the roster when the season opens.
You said very well might not be on the roster for opening season.
Okay, he won't be on the roster to open up the season.
See, look, I'm just listening intently, and we're doing the thing. You love me, you know it. You absolutely love me. I'm gonna Jimmy Butler hit you with the tee on the ground like 2 weeks from now. It's gonna be great.
Oh my eyes.
I love hurting your brain. It's my favorite thing. But I that's the same order. Like, I think Jetty's gone this summer. I think Dean is probably on the roster in the next season unless he's put in a trade, and I think Lamar is kind of just like, I think like the organization really likes him even if it hasn't totally popped for him. Like I think that he has fans in the coaching staff and fans in the front office and fans in the locker room that I think keep him around.
Yeah.
Would you have tried him in the playoffs?
Lamar or Jetty?
Lamar. Oh, we saw Jetty. That was not helpful.
The Cavs did try Lamar in the playoffs. I think they tried him in game 4 or game 5 and the results
were like earlier.
Mixed.
Yeah, I just
earlier he, maybe if you just so I think about how Ty Lue subbed in Kendrick Perkins just to lay out Jay Crowder in that one scenario. Like, if you wanted Lamar just to like, if JB's like, hey Lamar, I'll pick up your fine, and just like have Lamar like just rough up a Knicks player, like maybe that just to set the tone and the edge.
Sure,
maybe, but like, yeah, sure, why not? But maybe not in game 1 or 2, just because he wasn't realistically in the rotation heading into that point either. And you stick with what you know, maybe what you prepare, but maybe that could have been a back pocket option. I don't know. It's interesting to think like I don't think Lamar Stevens would have been like a tone setter or like a huge difference maker for the Cavs, but he would have set a tone for them if he played earlier in the postseason, I think.
Sure. All right, let's end there. Thanks for making Lockdown Cavs your first listen every day. Every dayer is back tomorrow. We're going to talk about Jared Allen, trade value, and if Cleveland should look to move him this summer. I want to remind you, by the way, you can catch NBA games on the SiriusXM app, on the SXM app. Search Cavs or whatever NBA team you want to listen to there to catch out the hometown broadcast when the NBA season is in full swing. Talk to y'all tomorrow when we talk Jared Allen and all that fake trade funness.